So, welcome everyone to the Chrome Power interview. Today I am introducing you to Suzanne Robbins. Now, I will introduce her to you. We're going to be talking about something which is really pertinent. It's always pertinent, but actually, I feel like it could be more pertinent now at this time of life, but also what's going on in the world. We're going to be talking about standing on the side of love. But let me tell you a little bit about Suzanne. So, Suzanne is an author, a relationship coach. She's a chakra therapist. She's a retired social science professor, and she's also taught yoga and Tai Chi classes for many years. Her first book is called Exploring Intimacy: Cultivating Healthy Relationships Through Insight and Intuition, and it combines Western psychology with Eastern mysticism. She's also completing her memoir, Loving More Than One, and she's written in other books as well about alternative relationships, both straight and gay. And we're going to be, I'm sure Suzanne's going to be sharing with us about her journey to arrive at the situation where this became something that she really wanted to dive into. And so I just want to welcome you, Suzanne.
Thank you. And I'd like to say that I'm really longing for discussion. And so I'm hoping, I know that you usually don't put out the discussion to the bigger list, but today maybe we could ask if people are okay with, having the discussion be part of what gets sent out. Would that be possible?
It's not really, I'm afraid.
Okay.
But we can have a great discussion in our group because people who are in the discussion, they need to be members of the Chrome Power community. So the discussion's going to be great. So I thought this would be a really good place to start would be, what I raised just now, which is, this is such an important thing for you, this issue about love and relationships. And I wonder, if you would like to share about your journey so that you can sort of explain to us like how this became such an important topic to you. And then the fact that you bring in so many different perspectives into understanding what this is about, not just not just from books, but from lived experience and from observing lots of different communities as well. So yeah, so let's start there.
Okay. So, it's an internal struggle that starts when you're young, or for me, and for many people, that when we're questioning, who we are and what our place in the world as we're adolescents. And right now, it seems like there's questions about what gender am I, which was not something when I was growing up that people would question that. But more, who do I love and who am I attracted to, was not something that was talked about. I was brought up in Western New York in the 50s in a very strict Roman Catholic family. And it something is going on inside that nobody's talking about on the outside makes one look within and search for different aspects, different books, different authors, different ways to approach what's going on inside. And so that my search began when I was 13, 14 years old, coming of age, and knowing that I was attracted to the girls as well as the boys, and that that wasn't okay because nobody would talk about it, even the people that I was closest with. So I started looking to see if there were other people that were talking about it, and there wasn't many.
Yeah, so what was that like as a teenager being in that situation?
I think now, looking back, that I shut down a lot, that I went internal more than, like you can only push your friends so much to talk and to participate in your internal process. And then what happens is you become more self-reflective and more an internal search. And to be honest, I still find that to be true, which is why I'm longing for the discussion, is because I can bring up the topic and nobody really wants to go there. The topic of sexuality in general, of just deep, looking deeply at what does love mean. And I do want to acknowledge that the standing on the side of love phrase that we used as the title comes from the Unitarian Universalist Association, that when they became what they called welcoming communities maybe 30 years ago, that's the they adopted that slogan that we shouldn't be questioning who people love, just more that we needed more love, and that if whether men loved men or women loved women, that would be an acceptable thing that they as a congreg as congregations, or they call themselves fellowships, actually would be open and accepting to that. And that has continued till today, not only about alternative sexuality, but the whole gender non-binary idea of accepting people for whoever they are. Their first principle is acknowledging the inherent worth and dignity of everyone. And that's not easy because people are very judgmental.
Yes, I think we all are. I was going to say, yes, they aren't they? But we all are. But I want to go back to your story because you married, I believe, and you had children. And out of that experience, was it out of that experience actually that you felt that you wanted to explore this more again because you went to college after you had raised your family, I know. So just, talk us through the process of, your life and what went on there to get you to the point where you said, okay, well, when I was a teenager, I turned to books because there was nobody talking about these things. And then you, at a later stage, decided you wanted to go and study it.
Right. Well, so last month, Jane and Cindy were both also sharing parts of their story about the strict Roman Catholic and the whole thing about babies and how that as women that we were taught that that was our main purpose for being was to have children. And my mother had six. I'm second oldest. And so the getting married was in the society where I was growing up was the only way that you could leave home. There, I did. I wasn't. I don't have college educated parents. I was the first one in my family, much later, to go to study. The idea of studying or going away to school, my father absolutely forbid it, even though I had scholarships, and he wouldn't put his tax, he wouldn't sign the papers or where they had to look at his taxes. No, that's just not what girls were going to do. And he wasn't okay with that. So there was then the search became to find a husband, somebody that I could start a family with, and did that. And I was miserably unhappy. And even though we ended up staying married for 25 years, that I started looking and talking to him and trying to find other people. And at that time, there wasn't a lot available to read. And partly what's prompted my being willing to talk today was getting to know this community good. But now, can you see that the right way if I'm mirrored? That so in the first of the year, this book came out, American Poly, which is a history about people who are looking for alternative relationships. And I'm briefly mentioned in the book for having appeared on talk shows back in the early 90s. And but many of the different things that he talks about, I was also a part of. So even though I wasn't like a out there with my name up on the top, and my name is not even the same because I used a different name when I went on national television. And but the idea that it was tied, what he points out is that it was tied back to religion. And I have another book that is a much older book called Radical Spirits, and this one is about different women in spiritualism and women's rights in 19th century. And here too, there were women, not, well, there were communities where people were having open relationships, where they were willing to look at loving more than one within their community, and they were always being judged on the outside. There was always people who were saying they were bad and wrong and this wasn't okay. And so as the gay movement progressed and people became coming more and more out and more visible, the idea of being bisexual or of loving more than one continued to be repressed. And the my Exploring Intimacy book does not address these subjects at all because I wasn't ready to expose myself at that point. Whereas is the memoir that I'm feeling complete with, but I'm hesitating to publish because I still feel that I wouldn't call it a fear of being judged as much as just a distaste for being judged. You know, it's just hard for people to, or for myself, I can only speak for myself, knowing that people don't particularly want to talk about it, don't particularly condone it. And now, in the particular political scene that we're in right now, where again, people are being so judgmental about women's rights, whether it's the abortion issue or whether it's gay marriage, that we're dividing and taking sides in a way that's very uncomfortable. And I feel like that we need to move away from that. And I'm not sure how to do that except through little forums like this and opening discussions like this.
Yes, it's like the whole ability or what's the word I'm looking for? Opportunity to be able to have conversations about this seem to take some steps forwards over the decades, perhaps a while back. And now it's closing in, I feel, probably all over the world. At the same time, is it becoming a bit more vocalized as well by people who are actually saying, no, we want to have these conversations, but we've got the structure on the dominant discourses of our cultures saying, no, let's close things down, let's close things down.
Right.
I wanted to ask you actually about about all of the different philosophies, the Western psychological or psychological perspectives that you studied, and the Eastern mythologies. And I know that you've been a pagan, and you have such a wide variety of things. I wonder, has that helped you to understand any of this about what's going on with people in our cultures, that they close down about these issues, that you
Right.
perhaps, or other people who say, no, I'm not talking about that? Has it helped?
Great, great question. No, it hasn't helped. It's like, I mean, that's the hard part, is that it hasn't, it doesn't change. That it's like as many different circles, and I've also moved many times. So I've lived on both coasts. I lived in Denver for a decade, and it just, I don't know why. Just like, let's talk about the abortion issue for a minute. If we talked about the sexuality of making a baby and the fact that, women need to say yes. I mean, we're getting better about talking about that, but that the abortion issue is similar to like women getting stoned in the Eastern countries. I think there was this group that talked about that a little bit. And that it's the woman's fault that she's pregnant. It's the woman's fault that she has this baby, and that she has to make the decision to abort the baby. And we never talk about man's responsibility for making the baby, and who, and then when the men will say like, oh, well, wearing condoms are uncomfortable, and I didn't want to do that because I wouldn't be loving her so fully if I'm blocking, and it's like, but why have we not change that conversation and talk more about the reality of what happens when two people come together and it feels so good and you want that connection and that closeness. But there has to be that decision that this act is to make a baby. And if we're not going to make a baby, we need to do things to not make a baby. And there's ways to do that. And yet, it took so long for birth control to become something acceptable. And it still seems like and I'm not like, I don't want abortion to be acceptable. What I want is there to be a different conversation about it. But I've never felt strong enough, if you will, to be in the public square and talk about that aspect of it. I talked about it in the classroom with when I, had influence on several thousand students, and that's, I feel like I brought that subject up and was able to talk about it. So I hope that's answering your question, that I think the conversation has to change, but I'm not sure how we go about it other than little groups at a time.
And what I was going to ask you, why you feel the conversation hasn't changed.
Well, it has in some aspects. So let me address that. Sex before marriage was something totally forbidden before, and now it's okay to have sex before marriage. It's become a much more acceptable thing. Being a single parent was totally out of the question, but now being a single parent is something that we accept that can happen. And so and people having sex with a variety of people until they get married. So that was why the third question about who should control marriage. This idea that we have laws about who can marry who, or that we're concerned about who's being sexual with who. So that conversation has changed somewhat for some people in some places, but in many places of the world, it hasn't changed. And, here in America, I feel like we're backsliding.
And do you feel I'm very interested that marriage seems to be quite a big part of this conversation. And I wondered if you feel now, looking back on your life and all, not just your own life, but with the wisdom of years looking back, do you feel that marriage is a valuable institution or a valuable partnership?
Well, this idea of the word polyamory, which means loving more than one. And there was another word, polyfidelity, which was being faithful to more than one. And so in that, and in many of these early communities, there was a closed system. It wasn't just open to everybody and everybody having sex with everybody. There was the idea of being married or to have that be legal to be able to be in a relationship with more than one person. Some of that has changed too, which he points out in this history of American poly. And if you go online with the different social media now, there's so many more things talking about poly, this idea of being open to more than one. In many ways, it's better for the children to have more than two people who may or may not be arguing with each other and disagreeing with each other all the time, to be more open-minded and having more like-minded input. Is there's some benefits to that, having more than one income. It used to be that the woman stayed home and the man went to work, and and now that's again another thing that's changed, that we have two incomes if there's a regular marriage, or more if it's more of a communal kind of a thing. And so it's been proven that there's lots of benefits for the children. So again, thing it's not that nothing has changed. It just needs to continue to change, in my opinion.
And I wonder, being older now as well, do you find that are older women more open to talking about their sexuality, do you find, or what's your experience with?
With people online, I mean, like I said, that was last time when we were together, we were talking a little bit about past sexuality, at least. No, I don't particularly find that especially in the, I live in a very small town, you know, people here are not so open to talking about it. And I, like I said, I try to push the door open a crack, and I don't have a lot of luck with it. And but being online in different Zoom groups, I'm part of something called Gather the Women, which is also another wonderful online community. And there we do address it a little bit more, not on a regular basis, but on the idea of being in circle together and being able to talk openly to each other and about whatever the topic may be. And often it is about, it is, and I wouldn't say often, sometimes it is about sexuality and our struggles. And many of the women have been married and now identify as lesbian and are with the partners who are also part of the group. But the idea of loving more than one or of loving both a man and a woman is still not something that I find many people are open to talking about. It tends to go more to the promiscuity, to more the raw, erotic, not erotic is that's not the word I'm trying, you know, when it's I'm losing the word I want to say, that it's not so much about erotica as it is about raw sexuality, just like the act rather than the relationship. And that's the way that the bisexual community anyway tends to be, the literature tends to be more in that direction rather than this concept of being able to love more than one.
It's very interesting because as I do the summits that I do, I have become aware of an increasing number of sexual pleasure coaches. I don't know how to say it, how to
Right.
express it, just like you were thinking, well, what, how do I phrase it? But let's say that. So it's about working with older women to help us get in touch with our own sensualness and pleasuring ourselves, and then that being the basis for having deeper, more intimate relationships with others. And so I've become aware of this, and I have interviewed some people, and I find it incredibly, I'm like the epitome, really, of somebody who wants to be open to discussing things like this, as long as it's removed from me. But when it comes to me, and I'm sure this is how lots of people feel, it's like, oh my goodness, I don't want to go there. This is too uncomfortable. And that's because we're not used to having these conversations. But I just want to put in one other thing that's really strange about this as we get older, and something I've noticed is that there's a big increase in sexually transmitted diseases amongst older generations. So within rest homes or whatever they're called, where older people can go and be looked after, there's quite a lot of promiscuity going on. And there's quite a lot of love situations going on as well. But there's a lot of sexually transmitted diseases appearing. And also, I have some friends who are in their 60s and divorced, who are online dating. And for, I don't know if it's the same for all generations, but for this generation, it seems to be, it's about sex rather than relationships. So I just, I don't know if you've come across this.
Well, I mean, so here's again the lack of conversation. If the sexually transmitted diseases wouldn't be so prevalent if people were more open to talking about cleanliness and prevention and what they need to talk about, as opposed to forbidding it and saying, oh, this is a terrible thing and you shouldn't be doing it, as opposed to if you're going to do it, you need to take these precautions. And my daughter and I have this conversation every now and then, and I'm not real close with her. She lives in Hawaii. And this, one of the reasons we're not close is because the difference between being a public person and a private person. And so that's, part of what you're addressing. She feels that I'm much too much of a public person and that she is so much more of a private person. And I have two sons also. And I've talked openly with one of my daughter-in-laws, but not necessarily the other one. And it just, again, this taboo that we have on sharing our thoughts and our opinions and our voices in a way that we can listen to each other and be open to each other as opposed to judging each other. So, back to that original theme that somehow we need to be less judgmental about who and what and how we love. And I think if there were more conversation about it, that there would that there that that would ease that com the co having conversation would ease more conversation, if that makes sense. You have to start somewhere. So that's my goal in the moment.
And I guess, I mean, we'll go into discussion in a moment, but I guess also the as you were talking there, it just became really obvious to me that it's not just about, loving more than one or who we love. It's also about loving ourselves. And it's also and there's that dimension, and there's also the love and the sexual relationships, the intimate relationships as well, because you can love without that, but also we can't just pussyfoot around the intimate relations. For a lot of people, they do exist and they're important, and they might just be important, to ourselves. And it might just be about our intimate relationship with ourselves, but it might also be about our how we show up in the world in terms of being attracted to more than one person and what that means for us at this age in our life, especially.
Right. And that brings us to the third question also, though, is that what regulation should be placed? So it does become a political question when there's laws then that are being said that this is not okay. And that's one of the wonderful things that this man, the man who wrote this American Poly book, is a theo was studying to be a minister, to be a theologian. And he wanted to do something different for his thesis, to look at life through a different lens of how it is we relate to our to a higher power, to divinity. How do we understand God and this idea of Father God, and that there's the Father and the Son, and there's no mention of women or the divine feminine within that, which is why it then ties back into the this idea of crones and the divine feminine, that's another whole piece that gets left out of that conversation, is if this male god had a male son and no woman was ever involved. And in some places, the Holy Spirit, the idea of Sophia, or the wisdom, becomes in that Trinity idea, the idea of the feminine aspect is there. But again, that's a conversation that's very seldom talked about in bigger circles. And so it is in little places, more and more. Well, because I'm on so many different lists that are dealing with divine feminine, so I see it happening more and more. But that doesn't mean I'm seeing it in my friends and neighbors. Again, it's the online community that's making a huge difference.
Yes, and maybe that's because we feel safe because we don't come up against each other in everyday life,
I wondered
Maybe
about
there's
that.
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I think, shall we open this out to discussion
That
then?
would
So
be
we
wonderful.
can get